Hello, everybody. Hello, hello, and welcome back to The Truth About Sales. Welcome back. Welcome back. And I'm making this call officially from my brand new iPhone 7. Just thought I'd throw that out there. So we did some cool stuff last week. So last week was the setup. We did a bunch of setup. We did a little bit of admin, and we spoke about setting up the structure of rapport, right? So again, what is rapport? Rapport is a state of being characterized by trust and responsiveness. This is what happens over a long, long periods of time with your friends and family and loved ones. And our goal, our intention is to do that, bam, right now, quickly, instantly. We also worked last week on, we talked a little bit about how do people listen. And we set up a self-critique exercise called the 360 review. So since we all know that decisions are actually value judgments, this week we're going to take on and delve into our values, how we got them, where they came from, whether or not those values are serving us, and then how those values control our buying habits. And we're going to learn a really quick process to elicit the values from our clients. So I want to know what their values are, which will make it really easy to help them. So this exercise of eliciting their values is also predicated on our ability to listen. So the process also includes a listening exercise that will give us very deep, deep insights and simultaneously bond the client to you. If you caught it, of course you did, last week in the 360 review, notice that exercise also contained a listening exercise. How is that a listening exercise? Because the only thing you're allowed to say in that exercise is, thank you. Is there anything else? And then you're writing notes. So instead of processing your defense, instead of protecting yourself, and wait a minute, hang on, let me tell you what my side of the story. Instead of any of that, the exercise last week forces you to listen. The number one complaint against salespeople across all industries is the salesperson didn't listen. And I contend that the client will give us all the details we need to close the sale if you just listen. And so last week's exercise, this week's exercise, next week's exercise, here in the beginning, the first few weeks of this curriculum, lots of stuff that we're doing is based on our ability to listen. The client will give you everything you need to know to close the sale if you're willing to listen. So during our time today, you will get a whole new perspective, on how we, as human beings, how we process our decisions, how we choose what's right for us and what's not right for us. Now, as usual, I can't promise that everything in this course is going to be absorbed automatically. I can promise that when you commit to doing these exercises, that you will have breakthrough experiences that will change the way you relate to others, it'll change the way you listen to others, and hopefully it will transform the way that you interact with yourself. So that's really the intention. All right, so before we jump into all that new stuff, let's do a little check-in with all of you. The call last week, because it was the first call, because it had so much setup, because it was my introduction and all that nonsense, you already know who I am. I don't need to, hi, my name is Joel Rico. You guys already know who I am now. So let's do a little check-in. Other than the first call last week, I would like these calls to be as interactive as possible. The more interactive and dynamic it is, the better we all learn and evolve. So who has an aha, a breakthrough, a share, a problem, something that didn't work about last week? Something about playing the rapport game, mirroring and matching other people to have some magic ensue, and or from doing a 360 review. What did you get? What did you learn? Blah, blah, blah. So one more time, to unmute yourself, star 6 will unmute you on your phone, and then call out your name so everybody knows who's talking.
Harry Gibbs in Georgetown, Texas.
Hi, Harry Gibbs.
Hey, Joel. What happened was, I think down deep we all know we have weaknesses, and I think there was some confirmation from the people I interviewed. And on the strengths, I was extremely surprised to hear things that I didn't think I was as strong at. And the people would say, wow, you know, you're a great communicator. You do this, you do that. And I was extremely surprised, and it opened my eyes.
Yeah, this is one of the most powerful parts of that exercise is, you know, we always have a convoluted concept of who we are. And really, who we are is how we're reflected in the state from others. So, for example, if you think you're a great guy and everybody thinks you're a jerk, are you a great guy or are you a jerk? You know, it's how we're reflected in others. So awesome, awesome feedback. You're a great listener. You got a whole new handle on your strengths. Anything powerful that you learned in people helping you point out your blind spots? I think Harry remuted.
No, I unmuted. I muted and now I unmuted.
Gotcha.
I think blind spots, I think it's nothing really just jumped out at me on that or them. It was more just critical about strengths, weaknesses, and apologies. And I really didn't have any apologies, too. I asked of the people I asked. I didn't need to apologize, which I felt that I do need to apologize to some people. I just didn't interview those people.
Ah, very nice. And maybe the people you interviewed didn't know the people that are due an apology.
Very good. Very good. Yes.
Right. Maybe those people didn't say, yeah, you need to apologize over there to Fred. Maybe they don't know Fred.
And Joel, one last aha. I think a lot of times we have compartmentalized relationships with people that know one aspect about us, and then others, whether they're clients or somebody we interact with, it's a totally different picture. So I need to really go across the board with everybody and not just interview.
Yep.
And I'm still going to do. I've got about 9 more I want to complete even as we go through. And I really want to know deep down, hey. I want to get better at this. I know I have weaknesses, and I want to improve. That's why I'm doing this. So anyway,
Perfect.
That's it.
Bravo, Harry.
Thank you.
And everybody else listening, that's the attitude that lets this exercise work. I really want to get better at this. I want to find my blind spots. I want to know how I'm showing up for people, right? Like, I might think that I'm, in my mind, I might be really excited. I'm going to say real estate because most of us are. I might be really excited about real estate. I might be, you know, making money and investing and flipping and holding. I might be making a killing and really excited about the real estate game. And yet it might be showing up to clients and prospective prospects as pushy. So my interpretation might be excited, but their interpretation might be pushy and aggressive. So am I showing up excited or pushy? Well, the customer's always right. If the client thinks you're pushy, then to them, you're being pushy. So remember that the only true measure of any communication is in the response that you get, regardless of your intention, right? My intention is that I'm just excited, and yet how does it show up? If it shows up pushy and rude, it doesn't make any difference what my intention is. Awesome, Harry. Anybody else? A win, a breakthrough, anything really cool that you got out of that exercise from last week? I heard several people mute and unmute. Anybody else?
All right,
okay,
this
anything?
Is Jeanette Ernest. Basically,
I'm sorry,
what I learned from...
This is who?
This is Jeanette Ernest. Jeanette Ernest. Hi. And what I learned from the exercise was there was a consistency, which I was grateful for the strong points, and then also for my weaknesses. And when I asked, you know, what I could do better, what I was hearing is I need to learn how to ask for help. And that was kind of interesting because I never looked at myself as a person who, I've always known that there would be people around to help me. I just never thought about the fact that maybe I wasn't asking them and giving them a chance to help me.
Wow, that's a nice insight. There's a lot of people in the world, me, for example, that, you know, one of my commitments in the world, in fact, it's how I sign all of my emails, is to making a difference. Here's to making a difference. That's just one of the things I'm committed to. I'm committed to making a difference in the world. I'm committed to leaving people better than I found them. You know, I'm committed to be a contribution, a contributive force of good in the world. However that shows up, I have no idea. And so if there's people like me around you and you're struggling, you know, people like to help. So that's a nice aha. Bravo, Danette. Bravo. And I think one another thing that both of you said, both Harry and Danette, is that it was pretty consistent. Most people said largely the same things about me or about you. That's a very good sign that you're, you know, consistent. Very good. If everybody had something different to say about you, then it's hard to learn from that. But when you, the message is pretty consistent, you know, if everybody says, oh my gosh, you're just an awesome person, and you have this one blind spot, and everybody says the same thing, then, you know, it's a pretty clear message that the consensus is that, you know, that's a clear blind spot for you. Right on. Thank you for sharing that, Danette.
Okay.
Okay, one more call. Anybody else? Anybody dying to share what they got out of either the 360 review or mirroring and matching playing the rapport game? I'm going to give you another rapport game today, by the way, right now. Going once, going twice. All right. So we spoke last week about playing the rapport game. I like to call it the game because I'm hoping it's going to be fun for people. And we just did it kind of generic last week. And by generic, I said mirror and match people. If they do this, then you do it. If they talk loud, you talk loud. If they talk fast, you talk fast. Get in rapport as quick as you can, whatever that is. If they, this is a hard one for people, if they curse like a sailor on shore leave, then it's okay for you to curse too. Never be the first one. Right? And you don't have to curse as much as they do. If they're dropping the F-bomb every 30 seconds, you know, you don't have to do that too. Yet if they're cursing like a sailor and you're cursing zero, then on some level they're going to not feel authenticated by you. They're not going to feel like their way of communicating is honored by you, and they're going to, you know, not feel the rapport. So we're going to fine-tune that a little bit this week. I'm going to leave you with a game. I've been giving people this game for 10 or 15 years. It's really super fun. So the rapport game for this week is twofold. So last week, the rapport game was just mirror and match them, right? If they're happy and, hey, this is so great, then you go, okay, great, this is going to be good. They do it with them. Just think about how you'd be with your friend, right? Your friend wins the lottery. What do? You celebrate with them. Your friend has to put down their dog. What do? You mourn with them. We share the sadness with. So keep doing that. And this week we're going to focus specifically on their rate of speech. So really, really pay attention to how fast or slow they speak. And really focus in on matching their speed. If they talk really, really quickly, then you talk really, really quick with them. Why? Because this is how they talk. And the more we get in harmony with how they talk, the better they feel, and the conversation just flows. That's just how it is. And if they talk really slowly, and this is just the normal cadence for them, and you show up like, hey, this is Joel from Keller Williams Realty. I'm calling about your... Right? They're out of rapport. You're going to shut them down. So if they're really slow and methodical, if this is their normal, then join their normal and just be willing to be in the normal with them. For how long? For the whole appointment? Nope. Just until you start to feel comfortable. And after 20 seconds, a minute, 2 minutes, something, you'll start to feel, oh, okay, good, I'm feeling connected. Oh, that's better. Okay, good, here we go. Now I'm starting to feel like we're in the vibe together. And then what's going to happen? Automatically, even without thinking about it, you will naturally migrate back to your normal rate of speech, and you'll just kind of pick up back to what's normal for you. And when you've done a good job getting in rapport with them in the first place, they will follow you back to your rate of speech. Why is that? Because it feels good to be in rapport. Mirror and match their speed and get connected. And it feels good to be connected. Then when you migrate to your speed, oh, wait a minute, we're no longer connected. And they will follow you up or down to your natural speed. And they will follow you because we want to be connected to each other. And then you speak your normal speed as long as they follow. And then as soon as they stop following and they migrate back to their speed, then you start the game over again. Reconnect, get back into rapport until it feels good. And then once it feels good, you're going to forget about the game. And as soon as it feels good, you're going to migrate naturally back to your normal speed. They'll continue to follow you. And that game goes on back and forth, until the two of you find some sort of rapport equilibrium. And it usually happens in just a few minutes. And you might have to refresh it a few times. So what? All right. That's the first rapport game. The bonus round, the extra credit from this rapport game is, I'm going to set it up for you, the bonus, and you're going to have to write this down because your ego is not going to want you to do this game. So the bonus round is for one person, one time, 10 or 15 seconds only, this is an experiment, and it must be to a stranger. Do the opposite for like 10 or 15 seconds. So what that means is, in your normal travels, when you run into somebody who speaks much, much quicker than you do, or much slower than you do, when you find one of those people in your daily travels, just for 10 or 15 seconds, do the opposite. And the goal of doing the opposite is for you to literally feel it. I promise you, it will be uncomfortable. And the goal is for you to feel what happens to you when you're in this uncomfortable, destroyed rapport. And it's a little different for everybody. Some people, it makes their palms sweat. Some people, it gives them cotton mouth. Some people, it gives them an upset stomach. I don't know. It'll just be a twinge for a few seconds. The goal is for you to identify what happens to you when you destroy the rapport. Why? Why would I have you do something so uncomfortable? Because this is the thing that is causing you to lose your sales appointments. The rapport is being destroyed and you're missing it. And you and the client are drifting further and further and further apart. And because you're not privy, because you're not tuned into what that happens to you, you're catching it really late. And the rapport is getting worse and worse and worse and worse. And then you start trying to force the sale, but you lost the rapport. So the earlier we can tune in and fit and feel when the rapport goes off track, the faster we can pull it back on track. Then, once you feel it, oh my gosh, this feels horrible, I feel so uncomfortable. Once you feel it, fix it. Get back in rapport. And something very interesting is going to happen. When you do this, and you intentionally break the rapport, the other person is going to look at you like you're an escaped mental patient. They are going to not know what to do with you. They're going to be uncomfortable. You're going to be uncomfortable. It's going to be really weird. For 10 or 15 seconds, feel what happens to you. Then get in rapport and heal it as quickly as you can. And what will happen when you heal it? The person will step right back into rapport. They'll move forward as if nothing ever happened. Isn't that interesting? All right, so that's the rapport game for this week. Match the speed of everybody, and then one time, not to a client, not to your family, one time to a stranger, for 10 or 15 seconds only. Do the opposite. Destroy the rapport, feel what it feels like, and then fix it. All right, any questions about any of that? This is a very, very powerful game, and unfortunately, your ego does not want you to play this game because the ego's job is to have us look good and be right and be safe. And this is having you look silly and be wrong and put your ego in harm's way. So your ego does not want you to do this exercise, which is why I'm asking you to please write yourself a note. Because the moment we hang up this call, your ego is going to go, what? What exercise? No, 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 I don't remember that. So please, write yourself a note. Take this game on this week. All right, enough of that. Values. Questions, comments, ahas, breakthroughs, anything before we shift gears and jump into values. Going once, going twice.
Joel?
Yes?
This is Debbie from New York.
Hi, Debbie.
I find that most people all talk around the same speed. I don't really come across people that talk really slow or really, really fast.
Well, that's because you're in New York, and most of the people in New York talk kind of fast, and all of your friends are probably, your circle of friends are probably in the same kind of rapport dynamic. So what do you do? Well, you can practice by, I don't know, I go into the local coffee joint to get coffee, and the guy making the coffee, usually not the guy taking the money, but the guy behind the machine, the barista himself or herself, is all hyped up on caffeine and sugar, and they're going like triple speed. And so the guy at the cash register, I'm still three back from the cash register, and the barista leans over the giant machine and says, yeah, you in the blue shirt, what can I get started for you? And I go, how about a, well, what's a venti? What is that? Right? And the guy is just like, just freaking out. So you'll find somebody now that you're listening for it. And you're right, in your circle of friends, in your sphere, the people around you immediately, the reason why those people are around you right now immediately is because you're all, your natural styles are similar, which is why you were attracted to each other in the first place. So yeah, you need to find somebody who's outside that. You'll get it in your travels.
But even with clients, even, you know, I don't find that it's easy to pick out these unusual differences.
Well, again, I think that's most likely why you have the clients that you have, is because your natural style is similar to their natural style and they like you.
But I usually call expireds and for sale by owners that are complete strangers.
That's right. And the ones that have a very different style say, no thanks, goodbye, I can't, we're going to talk to our last agent, we're going to sell ourselves, goodbye, click. And the ones that are willing to talk to you are the ones that say, oh, wow, she has a very pleasing, oh, wow, oh, yes, hello, oh, hi. The ones that want to talk to you are the ones that feel good in your presence, at least your presence on the phone. The ones that are the most willing to talk to you are because their style feels natural around your style. And when you call, they go, oh, finally, somebody like me that I can talk to.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
I think so.
Okay. So keep looking, keep listening, and you'll find some people that speak faster or slower than you. You will. Now that you're listening for it, you'll find them.
Okay.
Awesome. All right. Let's jump in and talk a little bit about values. So from your trusty handout, what's a value? Well, values are simply our beliefs. They're the beliefs that we use to determine if our behaviors are right or wrong, good or bad. Our values literally determine our priorities. And they're also the measure that we use to tell if our lives are turning out the way that we want. When our lives operate in harmony with our values, we're happy. Feels like we're doing good things in the world. When we live our lives outside of our values, we're miserable. Right? If you have a high value on life and you're, you know, you got a job clubbing baby seals, right? You're going to have a miserable existence. If you're a vegetarian because you think it's mean and you get a job in a slaughterhouse, right? You're going to hate your life. So values are the filters through which we make our decisions. So a few questions for you to consider. These are in your handout too. Where do we get our values? Where did these come from? Where did you get your values? Who gave them to you? Do you think that you just invented these? Well, this is what I think is important. Consider that you were indoctrinated into your values. If you had been born in the Middle East, raised by Middle Eastern parents, I know that's a giant, what's the word I'm looking for? Normalization, like I don't know where in the Middle East, but if you were born in the Middle East, most likely you would have been raised Muslim or Islamic. If you were raised in China, you would think and act and process like a Chinese person. Little Chinese children that are adopted by Americans and they're born and raised, they're raised, for example, in L.A., in the San Fernando Valley, even though they're 100% Chinese, and they were raised by L.A. people in the San Fernando Valley, who are they as human beings? Well, they're Valley girls, even though they're 100% Chinese. So our value systems come from our environment. We're indoctrinated into these belief systems. So ask yourself, which of your values are serving you and which of them are getting in your way? My favorite example is, question is, how do you know if your values are good? Or how do you know if your value system is skewed? How do you know? Consider this. There was a time, roughly 150 BC, that in the heyday of the Roman Colosseum, and imagine that today was the day. This was the first time that a father was going to take his little boy to go to the Colosseum to see the big show in person for the first time. So what's that like for the little boy? Well, he'd seen his father go. He'd watched his father, heard his father talk about it. Finally, I get to go. I get to go with the adults. I get to go see the big show. I'm sitting in the college, beautiful, amazing Colosseum with all the other people and hearing the cheers and the screams, literally watching people get eaten by lions, watching people fight to the death. And then at the end of the day, the little kid says, "Wow, that was amazing, Dad. Can we come do this again next week?" So the question is that little boy a juvenile schizophrenic serial killer? Or is he just raised in a skewed value system? Right? There's nothing wrong with the little boy. Right? The hardware is fine. It's a software. Right? Raised in an environment where that's normalized. So the question is, where did you get your values? Are they helping you? Are they hurting you? Now, for our purposes today, here's the real question. How do your values affect your buying habits? What will you buy? What will you not buy? How does that affect you? I have a friend that will not buy anything but an American car. Why? Because I'm an American. I want this country, I don't have any judgment about that, yet his field is smaller. He'll only consider cars built in this country. Noble, right? I think I understand where his values are coming from. Is that good or bad? Well, it's good for some. So our clients have this filter too. our clients are making decisions based on their values. So our goal this week is, how do we get a handle on those values? Like, I may not get to the place of, you know, where will you buy a car and not buy a car? I mean, there's obviously values on what I'll eat and what I won't eat, right? I won't eat, I don't like to eat anything deep fried. It comes in a lot of packaging and preservatives. I don't want to eat that either. So I might not find out this level of value about food choices because that's not important to me in helping sell their home. What is important to me is the value of why they're moving, where they're moving to, what's that going to do, what's in this move? Not, I need a bigger house and I need it in a month. That's what they want. The thing that's really helpful for me is, and for you, is why do they want it? What's the significance behind this move? What's driving this move? You know, why, you know, where and when and how big, those are all downstream somewhere. What's really important is what's significant about this? So because all decisions arise from our personal values and our belief systems, we're going to determine a sect of those values and belief systems for our clients. And there's a very, very easy way to do this. And it is, on your handout, under core value, determining the client's core value. There's three questions. I don't know if it's written in your handout, but these are technically called the criteria questions. The criteria questions. And the criteria questions are three deep. And they start with, what's important about blank? So what's the blank? I don't know. What's important about moving? What's important about getting a five-bedroom house? What's important about living on the beach? What's important about retiring early? What's important about each kid having their own bedroom? I don't know, whatever they tell me. Right, what's important about getting out of this neighborhood? What's important about returning to your hometown? Right, I'm always going to say, hey, I'm happy to help you. Tell me what's going on. Well, you know, we're doing this, we're doing that. I want to find out what they're up to. And then question number one is, great, I'm curious. What's important about that? And they're going to say whatever they're going to say, right? This is the listening exercise. You're going to listen to whatever it is that they say. Well, it's important to me because this is what's important. And you're going to note their answer. Then in question number two, we're going to say, great, and what would having the answer to question number one, what would having that do for you? Oh, wow, it would do this, it would do that, it would grant me this. That would be amazing for me. Again, it's required that we listen to their answers. And then here's the kicker. Question number three, the one or two or three things that it will do for them. And question number three, I'm going to say, ultimately, what would having these things that would do for you, ultimately having these things from number two, what would that mean for you? Notice the cascade of the questions. What's important about that? What would having that do for you? And ultimately, what would having that mean for you or mean to you? Now, what am I digging for here? Well, a couple of things. I'm digging for the significance. And when you really do this right, when you really hit a home run, don't be surprised if the client gives you an emotional response at question number three. That means that you hit a home run. You may not always get it. And if the client's being a little resistant, I might have to ask one of these questions or more than once. If they're evasive, if they're dancing around, if they didn't really follow the thing, I might have to ask them again. That's okay. The goal here is to get to the significance, get to the meaning. All right, quick example, and then we'll play with this a little bit. So example number one, I just want all of us to follow along. Example number one, somebody says, you know what, we're going to move into a bigger house. Great, right? We're in this little two-bedroom, 1,000 feet. You know, we want that big house down the street. Great. I'm going to say, I'm curious, what's important to you? What's important about getting a larger house? And they're going to say whatever they're going to say. In this example, they say, well, you know, I have a degree in child psychology. we think it's very critical that each child has their own room, so they have a, you know, their own space. We think it's you know, critical in their development. They have a safe place to go, blah, 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 whatever. Great, now I know what's important to them. It's not that they want a four-car garage. It's not that they want something fancy to entertain. It's not that they are being ostentatious. No, none of that. It's that they think each child should have their own space. So now I know what's important about that. I don't know what's significant about that. I know what it is. I don't know yet why it is. So question number two, I go, okay, great. And I'm curious, what would it do for you, for each of your children to have their own room? What would that do? Now we get a little deeper. Right? Research shows that kids who have their own rooms develop a stronger sense of self. They grow into more autonomous adults. They learn how to problem solve. They blah, 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 whatever. Whatever their answer is. Notice you have to catch that answer because we're going to feed it back in question number three. In question number three, I'm going to say, that's outstanding. Wow. So ultimately, what would it mean for you if each of your children grew up to be excellent adults with a strong sense of self, a powerful level of autonomy, the ability to solve their own problems, and just really powerful, well-balanced adults? You know, ultimately, what would it mean for you if we were able to create that? Now what happens? Now the client's going to say, this might even be really emotional. That would mean that we're great parents. We've fulfilled our duty in this lifetime. We've been amazing parents. We've given our children the best start we can give them. From here, how much easier is it to help them get what they want? And consider nobody else, none of your competition. Ask these questions. And now, in your presence, because you cared, because you tuned in and asked these questions, listened to the answers, and then continued to dig a little deeper, because you did this process with them, maybe their goals, their dreams, their motivations, the significance of this whole thing very likely was spoken out loud for the first time. So now in your presence, they're saying, this would make me a complete human being. This would make me a great parent. I would be fulfilling my dying grandmother's last wish. I will bond my children to me and give them the best possible start in the world. From here, helping them get what they want is easy because we've tuned in to their significance, their meaning, what's behind it, the deepest core of their motivation. This is the key. Until I ask somebody these questions, I have no idea how to help them. I don't know what they're doing. Before asking these questions, we're all on the surface. Okay, you want to sell your house? Great. What do you think it's worth? What do you owe? Where do you want to move to? Okay, let's look at some numbers. All right, good. How does that work for you? Right? Totally superficial. With these questions, now we're connected. Now we're deep. This is the kind of deepness that I want to be with my friends and my family and my loved ones. This is the kind of open-hearted rapport. I want this to be the fuel that powers the relationship.
Joel?
All right. There's another example in there, but yes, questions, comments, anything, yes.
Joel, would these kinds of questions be something that you would ask on the phone when you're lead generating, or would this be something that you would do face-to-face in a listing presentation?
It could be anywhere. Just by my history, I've done this more frequently in person at the appointment. I think it's much easier to get in rapport face-to-face because you can read their body language. You can't do that so much on the phone. And on the phone, my number one goal is set the appointment. And I want to be a little cautious on the phone. I don't want to dig too deep. I don't want to be too pushy. The rapport is just getting started. You know, I don't want to do objection handling and argue prices and commission. All that I'd rather handle in person.
Okay.
Right? And unless you're one of those people that sells resort properties and you do everything over the phone, then you got to do everything over the phone. But up to me, I'd rather do this one in person.
And when you're going through question 1 to 2 to 3, do you repeat back their answer to the previous question, or should you reshape the
yes.
question so that it doesn't sound phony?
Well, I mean, I want to repeat it back. I want to include it in the next question, so it's involved, it's included in the next question. And I want to use their key words as much as I can. If they say, I want to be a great parent, then I want to say, well, you know, make you a great parent. So I want to use their key words as much as I can, and simultaneously I want it to be natural and organic and whatever. So look at this first example, again, the one we just read. So what's important about a bigger house? And they go, well, we'd really like each child to have their own room. Great. Question number 2, great. And what would it do for you for each child to have their own room? Notice, I'm just including their answer in the next question.
Okay.
Helpful?
Yes, very. Thank you.
Yeah. Awesome. Awesome. Anybody else? All right, one more example, and we'll play with that, and then we have another technique still, too. So the next example is same thing, different topic. So you know what? We're going to move up to the lake. Great. Good for you. I'm curious, what's important to you about living at the we're going to move up to, we want to live at the lake full time. So what's important about living at the lake full time? Right? I mean, of course I can make my assumptions. Oh, you're going to live at the lake. Oh, you must be a water skier. Well, maybe not. I don't know. That's my projection. I want to know what's true for them. So great, what's important to you about living at the lake full time? And they give whatever answer they give. In this example, they say, well, my wife's about to retire. I telecommute now, so we'd like to minimize our expenses, and we don't need 2 houses, right? We just come down here a couple of days a week. We're not even, you know, we want to be there full time, and we'd really like to just get out of the city and you know, sell off 1 house. We already have a beautiful lake house. We just want to be up there full time. Great. So I'm going to feed that back to them inside question number 2. That sounds great, and congratulations on the wife's early retirement. So only 1 household and getting out of the city, what would this do for you? Notice repeating their answer back into the question. And here in the example, they say it would open up our cash flow to only have 1 household. It would liberate our time. We wouldn't be commuting. And we just love the lifestyle being up at the lake. Now we're going to repeat their answer back in question number 3. Wow, that sounds amazing. Some form of agreement. So ultimately, if you had this cash, extra cash flow and more free time and this lake style lifestyle, ultimately, what would this mean for you? Now we're going to get to the heart of it. This is the goal. This would be like our dreams come true. This is exactly what we've been working for the past 40 years. This has been our goal, to retire and live at the lake. We're so close. We're there. This is the client that I want to help, this one. I want the relationship to be such that the client is like hugging me because I'm helping their dreams come true, not begrudgingly signing a contract to sell a commission because to pay a commission because they need a realtor to sell their home. I want the relationship such that the client is like, Joel was the one that helped us retire. Why? Because we hosted this conversation at the getting acquainted, at the listing appointment. And now our relationship isn't about selling the house. Now our relationship is helping their dreams come true. This is the significance. From here, easy to help them. And just simply going through this process has people feel loved and validated and understood. This is a game changer for your relationships. All right, my request is that you practice these criteria questions in your life. Practice these with a bunch of people. Ask your spouse, what's important to you about this relationship that we're having? you know what, I really want to go to Hawaii this year. Okay, great. That sounds like fun. What's important to you about taking a vacation this year? What's important about it being Hawaii? Well, because we need this and we need that and I like the sun and blah, blah, blah. Okay, what would blah, 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 what would that do for you? Right, big. It's just three questions. And find out. Your kids say, I want to grow up and be a doctor. Great. What's important about being a doctor? And what would that do for you? And find out. Like, what people want is not very exciting. Why they want it is the magic. The significance behind the decision is the thing that drives the decision. I want a bigger house. So what? Everybody wants a bigger house. Well, I want a bigger house because we're pregnant with twins. We need more bedrooms. Each kid needs their own space. The significance is where it's at. A bigger house, just an object. So what? Ask the questions and really dig down and find out what's driving them. All right, we still have one more technique to go today. Questions, comments?
Joel?
Yes.
Hi, it's Valerie Almanzar in Albuquerque.
Hi, Valerie.
One of the things that we typically do if we're talking to an expired is if they say, you know, we're disappointed, the house didn't sell, so what we've decided to do is we're just going to take it off the market. So then we go into, well, tell me, where were you going to move once the property sold? Can we walk through how you would handle that if we were going into those questions without going too deep?
Sure. So if you can get, first of all, it takes a bit of rapport here because expireds are usually upset. And I just want to say, they should be upset. Don't make them wrong. They should be upset. If your house is on the market 6 months, your realtor never called you back, it didn't sell, you had to collapse your plans, you'd be upset too. So just be zen with the fact that they're likely going to be upset and it's totally okay. But I'm just going to take their side and realize they should be upset. Okay, so they say, well, will you role play that with me, Valerie?
Yes, of course.
Okay. So start us off, put us wherever you'd like to put us.
We've decided that we don't want to sell because we just don't think the market's going to give us the price we want.
Yeah, I get that. I think there's a lot of people that were, you know, predicting the market was ahead of where it was. I totally feel you with that. I'm curious, would you share with me, where were you planning on moving to?
We were just going to downsize.
Oh, really? Huh. What's, and so off the role play for a moment, Valerie, tell me a little bit about Albuquerque. Is your market stable, flat, going up, going down, what?
It's pretty flat.
Pretty flat. Okay, good. So back to the role play. Oh, really? You were going to downsize. Okay. Would you share with me what's important to you about having a smaller home?
Well, it would be less maintenance for sure, and we would like to have money for traveling.
Okay, good. I can appreciate both of those. So, wow, less maintenance and money for traveling. I love it. So, Valerie, what would it do for you to have less, you know, less maintenance, less commitments on your time to maintain the house, and to have enough capital to travel around? What would that do for your life?
It would definitely make it more fun. We'd be able to be more simplistic and see the world more.
Outstanding. And that's kind of our intention in this lifetime, right, is to enjoy our lives. Boy, I have lots of clients that have overbought, and they're a slave to their mortgage. That's a horrible fate. There's really not much more important than you living the life of your dreams, is there?
I agree.
Yeah. So, Valerie, ultimately, what would it mean for you if you could travel and have fun and not be strapped down to this house and actually have this life? Ultimately, what would that mean for you?
Freedom.
Freedom. Wow. Wow, that's a big one. That's a big one. So, Valerie, if we could sit down for a moment and I could take a look at your house, maybe I can figure out why it didn't sell. The photos look amazing. So I don't know why it didn't sell, but the pictures and the description, I don't see any major flaws. So if you're willing to meet with me for 20 minutes, I'd be happy to take a look at the house, review some numbers, and see if there's any way that I can still help you get that house sold, liberate your money, liberate your time, and help set up your life such that you can travel and have some freedom. Would you be open to exploring that with me just for 20 minutes?
Yeah, it would only take 20 minutes.
Yeah, usually. If you have more questions, I'll stay and answer them. But yeah, I only need 20 minutes.
Okay, that sounds great.
So was that tough? Was that easy?
Flowed really, really, really well, and that person really felt like I would have felt like you really understood what I was interested in.
Yeah, so the reason why Valerie feels like I understood is because I asked. Consider the vast majority of your competition. The vast majority of your competition is calling expireds, and they're saying, ring, 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 hello. Hi, this is Joel Rika from Keller Williams Realty, and I'm sure you've realized your home came up on our computers and expired listing, and I'm calling to find out when you plan on interviewing me, the right agent for the job of selling your home. Click. Don't care, not about the customer, not helping. I am trying hard to get a listing. The client doesn't want to give you a listing. A listing is what they had that just failed. They don't want to give out a listing. They want somebody who is tuned in to help them make their dreams come true. The only way they know that's you is because you asked questions and discovered those dreams. Valerie, thank you for the question and the role play. That was perfect. Perfect.
Joel?
Yes.
Hi, this is Charles from Brooklyn.
Hey, Charles.
Hey, so, you know, you just used that script that's, like, right out of the Bold scripts. And, you know, so let's say you're calling expireds and you don't want to use that script because, you know, you have 30 agents in Bold right now out of your office and they're all using that same script. What
yeah.
do you use to start getting to that point where you could ask those meaningful questions?
Well, I focused strictly on rapport. First of all, let me say something really quickly about scripts. Scripts are a tool that are only effective for a brand new salesperson that has no idea what to do or what to say. Scripts are the first stepping stone. And scripts only work for a small percentage of the people, which is why they say real estate's a numbers game, keep calling. You get 5 out of 100, 6 out of 100, 3 out of 100, 3 out of 500, it's a numbers game, keep going. Because the scripts only work for a tiny little percentage of the people. Why? Because the seller doesn't have a copy. So what do I do? I want to get in rapport with the client. And then I want to facilitate a conversation that is a two-sided discovery conversation. A script is a monologue. Hi, this is Fred from AT&T. I'm calling about your long-distance service. So I see that you called Mexico and Canada 3 times last month. We have this new program that blah, 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 right? It's not a conversation. I want to engage the seller. Engage the client, get in rapport, engage the client in some questions, and enroll them into discovering.
All right, so literally
more and more and more of this as we go on. Yes?
So really, what is the first thing you'll say if you were calling an expired and you don't want to use that same old script? How do you, I mean, I understand you could start immediately getting a rapport by the way they answer the phone, whether they're high-pitched, low-pitched, slow-speaking, fast-speaking.
Yeah.
Take me through, like, what is the first thing you would say? Like, if you ring, ring, hello, and I just say hello. I mean, what
yeah, so
is the
if I'm
first
calling
thing
an expired,
you say?
If I'm calling expired, I have the address. I usually have the address and the seller's name.
Right.
Usually. So I would call, ring, ring, hello, and I would say, oh, hello, Charles. You'd say, yes. Hey,
yeah.
I'm calling about that house at 1234 Main Street. Will you tell me a little bit about it? Huh?
Okay.
Right, I just want to engage them in the question. I'm going to ask them a question or two about the house. Then I'm going to say, oh, yeah, by the way, I'm a real estate broker with Keller Williams Realty. What about this on the house? What about that on the house? Well, I see that the house just, after 6 months on the market, it just came off. I'm trying to figure out what happened. Would you share that? What do you think happened? Would you share that with me? Right. I just want to call and engage him in a conversation and be curious and discover. What most agents are doing is as soon as a seller picks up the phone, they start beating them over the head with a stick.
Right.
Which puts the seller on defense and has them start to protect themselves. I don't want to do that. I don't want to make my seller feel, my client, prospect feel like they need to protect themselves. I want to call and go, oh, what about this? Tell me about that. If the seller says, yeah, who the hell is this? I'm going to go, holy smokes, it sounds like they've been screaming at you today. Wow, what happened? Just take their side. That's all. Helpful?
Okay. Yeah.
More of that to come. We're just getting warmed up. We got 12 weeks, and we're just barely into week two. So
okay.
Much, much, much more of that to come.
All right. Thank you, Joe.
Awesome. All right. Really super, super fast, because we're late in the call, I want to give you a quick rundown on the next example, which is not nearly as important as the first example. The next one is when you're deep in rapport. Maybe this is a live listing presentation sort of a thing. Not only do I want to know what's driving their decision, I also want to know maybe their decision-making criteria. So I'm going to ask a few questions. These are in no specific order. These are just examples. I'm going to ask a few questions that will enlighten me to how the seller makes decisions. So I might say, hey, I see you got a brand new, $100,000 Audi parked in the garage. Yeah, it's a beauty. Yeah, I love it. I'm curious, how did you choose that particular car? And the seller might say, well, you know, if the seller is high C, like me, I'm high C. If the seller says, well, you know, I read all the consumers' reports, I read all the magazines, I read the spy reports, I went and drove six of them, I called my insurance broker, I did this, I did that, I read the brochure, I read the magazine, I called this, I studied the failure rates on the engines, I called my mechanic and found out what the repairs. That's a pretty detailed decision. And so if that's the way your customer makes decisions, then align with that. Give them stuff to read. Help them process. If your customer's high C, triple analytical, they're not going to make a snap decision on day one. So what do you do about that? You give them stuff to read. You bring them testimonials. You bring them your track record. You link them to things to read. You give them information to help them make that process. If, on the other hand, your client says, I see you got a brand new Corvette in the garage. Wow, how'd you choose that? They go, wow, I don't know. I was driving by the dealership, and I saw this killer Corvette sitting out there, with the one out on the front with the doors open and stuff, and I went, and it was the most beautiful shade of red. I went and looked at it and sat in it, and oh, my God, I had to have it. I bought it. That's a very different client with a very different decision tree. So how do you sell to that client? That client is gut and instinct, very internally motivated. So I want to find out, back to the criteria questions, what is it that's driving this? Oh, God, I need a big house. Whatever. So really briefly, the goal in step two of the lesson today, determining decision-making process, is find out how they make decisions and then offer them to, you know, offer to help them in that process. If they're quick, expect it to be quick. If they're gut, then speak to their gut. If they say, well, you know, I talk to my mother, I call my mother to make all these big decisions. Great. What's your mother say about selling the house? Do you want to call, you want a conference or into our meeting right now? Whatever. How they make decisions, I don't care. I want them to be honored. If that's how they do it, great, let's do it. If they need to read and process and talk to 10 people, good. I'll give them stuff to read and 10 phone numbers to call. I don't care. It's not up to me. I want them to make the decision that's right for them and however it's right for them. This is the nature of the customer is always right. If the customer wants to process like, great. Whatever's best for them, I'm totally okay with. The more that you can align with the way the customer thinks and processes and sell to your audience, instead of another reason why I'm anti-script, I'm also anti-canned listing presentation. because a script is all about you. A canned listing presentation is all about you. I want to authentically connect, listen, facilitate a conversation, enroll them in questions, discover what's true. I want to have an authentic, open, heart-to-heart conversation and let the magic bubble up. A script prevents all of that from happening. All right, we are top of the hour. So
Joel?
Last call before we break. Questions, comments, anything before we break today?
Joel?
Yes.
If you don't see a shiny, beautiful Corvette in the driveway, how do you find something to ask them about so that you can determine how they make decisions? What other-
Great question. Great question. I personally like cars, so if they have a cool car, I do the car. You could also do it on the house. How did you choose this house? How many houses did you look at before you choose this one? About 10. And how'd you pick this one out of those 10? Or how did you choose your last realtor? Or if you're in a really affluent neighborhood, I'm curious. I'm curious about how you make decisions. How do you choose stocks to buy or not buy? What, it doesn't matter. Any example.
Okay.
Any example, yeah. All right, so again, while we're here, a quick refresher. Our home play exercise is play the rapport game. Mirror and match the rate of speech. Talk fast with the fast talkers, slow with the slow talkers. And one time to a stranger, 10 or 15 seconds, do the opposite. Feel the uncomfortableness and then fix it. And then this week, practice the criteria questions with people that you know and your clients, whatever. Start this process of walking them through these three questions, listening, repeating back their answers, enrolling them in the next question, and see what happens. You will be astonished at what comes out of this exercise. All right. Next week, I believe, we start the structure of agreement. Uh-huh, yep. Agreement is saying yes, getting other people to say yes. How many times can we get them to say yes during the appointment? That's the goal for next week. All right, everybody. Thanks for being here. You guys rock. Have a great week as usual. Go make a difference in the world. Yeah, bye, everybody. Thank you. See you next time.
Bye, Joel.
Yeah, bye-bye. Have an awesome week.
Everyone getting off the call.
Goodbye.
What'd you think?